No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here again today. We've got a great show for you guys tonight. I got Ryan Matthews from the POD, Pride of Detroit podcast, and Pride of Detroit on SB Nation. Ryan, thanks for joining me, man. What's going on?
Not a whole lot, Matt. Just taking in some preseason football. Enjoying the fact that football is back.
It is nice. It is nice. I mean, actually, even it doesn't even matter who we're watching right now. I was very comfortable and very content watching some preseason games today. It just, yeah, football's football. It doesn't really make a difference who's playing or who's on the field. In fact, I think this year I'm more excited to watch probably the first couple games than I am even to worry about seeing some of the starters on the field this year. It's such a great season for the Colts anyways to see all the roster turnover, to see who's really going to earn their roster spots. And it's interesting to me, and I can't wait to watch this Sunday.
Yeah, I have to say that this year was one of the first years I paid much closer attention to the draft after Bob Quinn had the draft that he had in 2016. I know a lot of rookies coming into this preseason, so it's always fun to get a first glimpse at those guys in NFL action.
Absolutely. So we had the joint practice today between the Lions and Colts. There was a few injuries, mostly Colts, but you guys suffered a couple as well. Can you talk about those real quick?
Sure, yeah. I think the biggest one to make note of is right tackle Rick Wagner. He was a huge offseason acquisition for the Lions. As Riley Reiff went out, he departed to a fellow NFC North team. He went to Minnesota, so the Lions had to find a replacement, and they went out and paid out the wazoo to get the best guy on the market. They got Rick Wagner, and today he got injured in practice. The Lions, as many NFL teams are pretty tight-lipped when it comes to sharing the specifics of injuries. Mm-hmm. So we don't really know the nature of the injury. Jim Caldwell seemed rather unaffected by it. He seemed to play it down in a post-practice press conference. I'm not too worried about it, but I think that was the biggest injury. Also, Cornelius Washington, he suffered a injury. He was dealing with injuries during training camp the first week. He actually went out of practice. I believe it was on either Sunday or Monday at the beginning of training camp, and he hadn't returned to practice until today for the joint practice after doing some sprinting. But he's been a guy who's been plagued by injuries, but he's also a guy who the Lions expect to play an awful bit or an awful lot of defensive end this year for him.
Yeah, there was several major ones too. I mean, well, at least for the Colts, and the Colts had a lot of guys sitting out. Who do you guys have? Did you guys have any like major players sitting out in practice today either?
Yeah, Eric Ebron, he's been sitting out since after the first day of training camp. He tweaked his hamstring, so they're going to take every precautionary measure they can with him, make sure that he's right for the season. He figures to be a very integral part of their offense, especially with Anquan Boldin going out. He's the guy who's probably going to play the majority of the snaps in the slot. He's going to play kind of that quasi wide receiver. He's really a tight end, but he's more in that breed. The other guy who's been on and off in practice, it seems like every other day they're taking it really slow as he works his way back from off-season hip surgery, is TJ Lang. He was another big off-season acquisition with the Lions. Mm-hmm. He did not participate in the joint practice today. We'll see if he goes tomorrow. I would probably be surprised if he did. I'm not even too sure he's going to play in the first preseason game. He might play in the dress rehearsal week three of the preseason, but they're gonna really take it easy with him. And him being a veteran, I think that he's going to plug and play just fine.
Yeah, we had several guys out as well. Philip Dorsett, I believe, was out. Marlon Mack was out. He's looked really sharp this year so far. We finally got ourselves a bit of a back who can hit it long distance, you know, as opposed to the guys that are trying to get that 2 and 3 yard little jaunt and stuff just to keep the chains moving or to keep, you know, the pressure off of Luck or whatever. But there was plenty of guys out today. In fact, the list was pretty lengthy. Joe Haig was out. Swoop was also out. Rashawn Melvin, cornerback. Like I said, Dorsett and Marlon Mack, Quan Bray, who's basically our special teams return guy. And inside linebackers, John Bostic and Antonio Morrison. Now, Morrison's had a really fantastic preseason so far. Well, preseason, but training camp. He's looked really, really strong. And Bostic has looked pretty well, too. He's pretty much the de facto starter on inside linebackers as far as both in the base package and in the nickel. So it's crazy to see all these guys out. And then today we lose Ryan Kelly to a ankle injury, or I'm assuming they said a foot injury. But my guess, if it wasn't actually an angle or an ankle, that it was something on the bottom of his foot or whatever. He actually finished the drill, they said, but then he was escorted off the field. And there was a report saying that they saw him in crutches. So that's scary hearing that. But then also we get this update that they're expecting him out maybe around 3 weeks, so possibly to be back for the beginning of the season. But that, for the Colts on our side of it, that's a huge deal with everything coming together seemingly on the offensive line. It's kind of something that the Colts have been waiting to have for a while. Some young quality guys that are going to be playing. Last year they didn't play very well, didn't have a good season. This year they've got Joe Philbin back for a second year as their offensive line coach. Things are looking pretty smooth. Everything seems to be coming along nice. And then, you know, basically the foundation of that offensive line is, you know, in jeopardy of missing the first game of the season. And that does not help things, obviously, when we've got, you know, questions surrounding how long Andrew Luck will be out. As far as, you know, his realistic extensive time away, maybe a couple weeks is my guess out of the regular season, at most 3 weeks or something like that. A lot of people are worried that he's going to be on the PUP in the regular season. I don't see that. I feel like if the Colts really felt that way, they would have gone out and gotten somebody else to compete with, you know, the other quarterbacks on the roster. And Scott Tolzien's not going to cut it, you know, as far as for a 5-6 week span. And Chris Ballard is not okay with just handing over the first 6 weeks of the season to chance. So it's going to be a sketchy season so far. But like I said, a lot of these depth guys that the Colts are touting right now, a lot of fun guys to watch. And this is going to be an exciting game for me, as sad as that makes me feel, talking about preseason football that way. It's going to be a good time. Who are you watching this preseason?
On the Lions side of the ball?
Yeah, and more intently, who are you watching this week specifically? Who needs a good week one out of the preseason in your eyes to kind of really either get themselves into that, you know, backup role or solidify a starting role, or maybe just to get themselves on the 53-man roster in general?
The first guy that comes to mind when you ask me that question is Greg Robinson. He was a guy who the Lions went out, they acquired him for a 6th-round draft pick from the Los Angeles Rams, formerly of St. Louis. When they went out and got him after Taylor Decker had the labrum tear in the offseason, I believe it was in the middle of May, they knew that he was going to be out for an extensive period of time. They were very proactive about it. They went out and got Greg Robinson. They went out and got Cyrus Kwanjo, who was a former Buffalo Bills, also played for Alabama in college. So they got two guys who have really good pedigree in terms of where they came from colleges. Greg Robinson has really struggled as an NFL player so far with the Rams. Hopefully a change of scenery, hopefully a new offensive line scheme will help benefit him playing left tackle. Also, I think Cyrus Kwanjo has a real chance to take that left tackle job at the same time, though. So I'm really going to keep my eye on the left tackle position. The Lions invested an awful lot of resources this offseason in building that offensive line. They want to run the football. They want to protect Matthew Stafford. They want to keep him upright. They want to keep him healthy. When he went down, or when he suffered the finger injury in the Bears game last year, the final four games of the year they lost, and then the Seattle game they lost in the playoffs. So they need to keep number 9 healthy. So left tackle is something that I'm definitely keeping an eye on. The other position too, and his name popped up today, is cornerback Tease Tabor. Mm-hmm. And
man, I really liked him in the draft process. A lot of people didn't because of his lack of speed and so on. I loved that dude. To me, he was, you know, they talk about the Seattle Seahawks type players. This guy is, to me, he was a football player and a playmaker, not so much like the mold that people come up with for cornerback. That guy, I was not surprised to see that he made some plays today.
Right, and I guess the drum that's being beat in Detroit so far is everybody seems to be really down on Tease because in practice he's just really struggled. They've lined him up in situations in practice where he doesn't necessarily succeed, or that's not the position he's going to be playing. In practice, during one-on-ones, he's trying to play press coverage. That's not what he does. He plays off man. And Terrell Austin loves playing off man. I think that's why it was a match made in heaven to go out and get Tease. I went to the mock game that they had last week. Tease played pretty well. A lot of beat writers in Detroit necessarily didn't see it the same way. Even a lot of fans didn't see it the same way. I really would like to understand why fans can't wrap their brain around good coverage and a reception happening at the same time.
Right. Yep. There was a couple times. Now, Greg Toler didn't have a whole lot of those, but people like I understand what you're saying. Colts fans, even when he would have good coverage and somebody would make the catch, they still wouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt for having the good coverage.
Yeah. So it people have been very tough on Tease so far. Some people have been so quick to already label him Bob Quinn's first bust after after less than, you know, after a little over a week of practice. So it's going to be really interesting to see him in an actual game, because I think, like you said, he's a gamer. I think he's a guy who rises to the occasion because he's a guy who plays with instincts, and he's a guy who has a lot of awareness out on the field. And the funny thing is, in the pre-draft process, I was really high on Quincy Wilson, who the Colts got. So what have you seen from Quincy? Because I'm really intrigued to see him play in this game coming up this week.
He's a guy who's going to take a little bit of time, I think, to really reach his ceiling for sure. I mean, obviously a lot of rookies have that issue,
and especially corners too, right?
Yes. I mean, I think so. I mean, because he's got the length, he's got the speed, he's got all the natural ability, he's got the instincts and everything like you were talking about. And they've got him really far down the depth chart right now, which doesn't make any sense to me, especially from what I saw in camp. They actually have him, let me see here exactly where they've got him. They've got him at left corner, third, behind Tevin Mitchell. And that just was not reality from camp. You know, they never had him playing with as the third corner. They had, well, I'm not going to say never, but he, when they would go through 11-on-11s, he was always the first sub in at left. And he would come in for Rashawn Melvin and back him up. And just so on, they moved him quite a bit around, you know, formations and stuff like that, which was kind of fun. But he's looked quality. I mean, for me to say he's been excellent would be a lie. He hasn't looked excellent, but he has looked good. He has looked like he's catching on a lot, and that to me means something. When every practice you're doing something new to gain attention, and not only that, but he's taking coaching really well. You can see that there's a couple guys, he and another guy on the Colts especially, are doing this, and Nate Hairston, who was another draft pick later on, he not as highly touted nearly out of Temple, but both of those guys, you can tell that when they get done with a play, whether their technique was good or it was bad, or they missed something, they're always going to get affirmation from the defensive end or the defensive backs coaches and stuff like that, just to make sure that what they're doing is right. Even if they're even getting praised after the play, they're going over to double check, make sure everything's going, you know what I'm saying? And it's right. Good. I want my guys like that. People think that that's a sign of weakness a lot of times, that you need affirmation from your coaches. That's not it. You want to make sure that even though you batted the ball down, that you were in the right spot as far as how your coverage was going. I like that out of guys. I want guys who want to make sure that they're right every time.
Yeah, I mean, I think feedback is the most important thing in just about any aspect of life, and if you can get feedback immediately from anybody in any position, it's definitely important to get. And I'm really interested to see Quincy Wilson, obviously the other guy out of Florida, but the one other guy that I'm going to have my eye on is another Florida guy that the Lions drafted in the first round. They took Jared Davis.
I liked him too.
Yeah, the Lions really needed – they had a huge need at linebacker. It was where they got beat up a lot last year. Tyre Whitehead, who's still on the team, moved over to the outside. Jared Davis fits in the middle. I saw a tweet earlier on Thursday about a play that Jared Davis made where he popped somebody, and somebody could hear it from, they said, 50 yards away. So he's a guy who all throughout training camp so far, he looks like he's ready to just lay wood. I mean, he looks like a guy who's ready to go out there and hit some people and hurt some people. And that's something that the Lions haven't had since DeAndre Levy was healthy. And that was two, three years ago. So it's exciting. It's exciting what the Lions are building at this point.
And I think that we're kind of on the same platform on that, is that that's the hope for the Colts. I know that the Colts haven't been as impressive, obviously, in the past couple years, But that this, with Chris Ballard coming in, the new approach to everything, it really seems like a lot of the players have bought into everything. And it really seems to be a completely different mindset, a completely different aura around practices and with players and such. Now, Jared Davis, they've got him as you know, the starter on the depth chart. Is that accurate from everything that you've seen and heard?
Absolutely. This guy is a 21-year-old who has stepped up, and he's taken on the role and responsibility of playing Mike linebacker. I went to practice a few times, and he's out there. He's making all the calls on defense. He's making all the pre-call reads. He's communicating with the defense, and I think that at 21 years old, I wouldn't be in the position to do anything like that. So it's a huge undertaking for a guy to do that. What can you tell me about Malik Hooker? Because he's a guy who our draft guy in-house at Pride of Detroit, Alex Reno, he fell in love with Malik Hooker, mm-hmm. and he was super high on him. So what can you tell me about Malik so far? Is he on the PUP?
No. He was on initially. He came off, I think before they even had a practice. No, it wasn't. It was their first padded practice that he was back last Tuesday. He came back. There's not a lot that I saw last week. I haven't been to this week yet. But last week he looked really good, but he was in such small little windows of snaps. I mean, 10 snaps here, 15 snaps here, you know, because he's coming back off of injuries or surgery. I mean, so they're not rushing him back any more than they're rushing anybody else back. But you can see his processing on the back end there so easily. I mean, it's so smooth. He, you know, and I hate the fact that I have to compare it to Scott Tolzien being the quarterback. But it's, you know, that's just what it is. But he's reading Scott Tolzien like a book before he even knows what he's going to do with the ball. And that is really fun for me to watch for a guy on the back end. And, you know, a lot of people think Malik Hooker, they talk about his tackling and they kind of make him sound like he's a slight dude. But he's not a small guy. You know, I'm 6'2", and I'm looking at him eye to eye when I'm interviewing him. I mean, he is not a small dude, and he's not, you know, he's not thin or anything like that. He's got some size to him. But overall, I mean, he batted a pass down his very first day back at practice. Like I said, he took like around 5 to 8 snaps. The next day was a little more. You know, they're increasing his workload, which isn't much every day, though. And he batted a ball down on his one of his 5 to 8 snaps there. His second day, you know, he was rolling coverage really well. Was in position to make a couple plays, but the passes were deep or overthrown or something like that. So it was nice to see him in the right spots, even though you can't, you know, he wasn't actually making a play, so to speak. But he knows when to come up. He likes to be, he from what I see, I know that he knows he's not going to get, you know, a face full of Marlon Mack or Frank Gore in practice. But you can see that he is coming up in run support just as well as anybody else who they consider to be one of the hitters. You know, I'm impressed with him so far. I can't wait to see him in game because I want to see him put it all together. But you can tell why people talk so highly about his coverage skills. I mean, it's there, and it's not even something he has to think about. It's instinctual, and he's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year, I think.
He's a guy who really, watching a lot of tape on him, especially just because I kept a close eye on a lot of those Ohio State backs. I was really interested in Gary and Conley in the pre-draft process, and Malik Hooker was a guy who always flashed. And I think you touched on it. A lot of people thought he was going to be raw. A lot of people thought he was going to take some time. But if you can see some of those things even creeping up this early in the process, that's only a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Eric Ebron as far as the tight end that you were interested in watching here pretty soon. But what about mm-hmm. Marvin Jones, some of these other guys at wide receiver, TJ Jones, Aberderis, all these guys? Well, I mean, not only that, but Golden Tate, is as much as I can't stand that dude, I love watching him play. You know, he had a good day today. I think he and Nate Hairston were matched up, and Golden Tate's one of the best route runners I've seen, you know, in around his age, and he's impressive. Where do these guys actually go up? Because the depth chart, you know, is a little confusing. Where is their number one or number two and three, and where's their fourth guy coming? Is that Aberderis, or is it maybe somebody else?
Sure. So this is a hot button topic. It's something that we talked about today on Pride of Detroit, but Golden Tate is I think Golden Tate's going to move over to his more natural position in the slot. He's the prototypical slot guy, especially in Jim Bob Cooter's offense, which is a lot of horizontal routes. It's a lot of rhythm. It's a lot of underneath routes. It's a lot of, hey, get the ball to the guy and let him make a move. And that's what Golden Tate does best. He's all about getting yards after the catch. He's one of the best in the league at doing it. He's really, him and Jarvis Landry, I think, are kind of like 1A and 1B when it comes to those type of receivers. So when you talk about who the one is, who the two is, Marvin Jones is your traditional lineup to the left of your quarterback. He's going to be the X receiver out to the, you know, out to the left, and he's going to stretch the field, I guess, so to say. Golden Tate, I think he's going to more so line up in the slot. Last year, that was Anquan Boldin's role. Now he took off to Buffalo after the Lions drafted Kenny Golladay in the third round out of Northern Illinois. He's a guy who's wowed people in training camp and in practices so far, especially during rookie minicamp and OTAs. He was a guy who just caught every beat writer's attention. Every day it was, Kenny Golladay didn't drop a pass. Kenny Golladay looks so much better than a lot of pre-draft analysis and profiles, you know, said that he looked. His route running is a lot more crisp than they said it was. He's a huge guy. He's 6'4" and he's every bit of it. So the Lions ran, I believe, the third most three wide receiver sets in the league last year. So they always threw three guys out there. Now, do I think Kenny Golladay is going to go out there and line up outside opposite Marvin Jones a whole bunch? I'm not sure, just because I'm wondering where Eric Ebron fits in, because he's much more wide receiver than he is tight end. He's not a guy who's going to line up in line traditionally. They went out and got Darren Fells from Arizona to do that for them. And he's another guy who's played pretty well in camp. He's shown that he has much better hands than advertised, and he is, according to PFF, he's one of the best pass blockers and run blockers. So they really addressed the tight end position. They even drafted Michael Roberts out of Toledo. So they have a lot of options. You mentioned Jared Aberderis. You mentioned TJ Jones. They also have a homegrown undrafted free agent that they got, Jace Billingsley, who played with the team last year. You'll see him a lot in week one, and you'll be pretty impressed with him. I think the Lions legitimately have three guys on their team right now that if they get cut, they will end up on 53-man rosters. I truly believe that.
We are back with Ryan Matthews from Pride of Detroit. Ryan, I wanted to ask you something about the coaching situation there with Jim Caldwell. Is there any sort of, a kind of a lingering thought process that if this year something doesn't, take a significant step forward, that maybe he could be in risk of losing his job?
I think of any organization that would kind of know that, it would be the Colts, right? Where they're at with Chuck Pagano.
Good point.
I truly believe that the NFL, unless you're Bill Belichick, it's really a year-to-year job. I mean, your contracts mean nothing. So when they brought Caldwell back for another year, his contract has always kind of been in the back of people's minds, not so much as it has been Matthew Stafford's. That's been at the forefront. But when it comes to Caldwell, I think that the Lions can have a maturing season where you see a lot of growth and maybe their record isn't where a lot of people might want it to be, and Caldwell comes back. I don't think that he's safe from having a disastrous season. Mm-hmm. If the Lions go 5-11 or if they go 4-12, I definitely think that you might see Bob Quinn move on to their next guy. Bob Quinn had the opportunity when he came in, though, to kind of clean house, and he didn't. He wanted to keep Caldwell there, and a lot of people said, well, that might be a showing that Bob Quinn isn't ready at that point in taking on this new role to go out and get a new guy and label him his guy, because all of a sudden his timer's ticking, and he can kind of use Caldwell as an intermediary, kind of like, well, this was the old guy, and I wanted to keep him around for a year while I kind of built up the roster, and he kind of gets a pass on him before his clock starts ticking. Well, Jim Caldwell is kind of Bob Quinn's first guy now, especially going into his second season with him. So, but I definitely see everything I read, everything that I see from the players, they really like Jim Caldwell. And he really is a player's coach. And I think a lot of people were happy to see him come back, even after they had that 7-9 season after the previous year. You know, they experienced so much success and made it to the playoffs, and they were one penalty flag and a Sam Martin, you know, botched punt away from beating the Cowboys. So I truly think Caldwell's job is rather safe. to describe the seat that he's sitting on, it's not even lukewarm at this point.
That's interesting. And yeah. It's kind of funny the way you said that, that, you know, they had an opportunity to get rid of Caldwell if they wanted to, Bob Quinn. And that's a similar situation here in Indy with Ballard and Pagano. You know, he had an opportunity for the most part. I mean, you know, it may have been kind of, you know, spoken that Irsay wanted to keep Pagano around. That was the deal. But I really think that they felt that a lot of the issues are gone. You know, I know, and everybody else who watches Colts football, even if it's just passively, knows that Chuck Pagano has a lot of growth that he needs to take on as far as being a quality coach, as far as I'm concerned. But I think that they think he has all the right traits. I mean, kind of like any player. You know, you look at a guy and you see, you know, 5 years is a long time to really not get it. But at the same time, you have to look at the guy and give him an opportunity with the right situation around him. And if it doesn't happen this year, and I'm not saying that the Colts have to win 11 or 12 games by any stretch of the imagination, but they've got to see something in Pagano that says, okay, the lights turned on with him. He's got the team rolling in the right direction. They're you know, the potential that is there for this team to really explode the next season, even with him there. He's not a detriment to the team as a coach. If they see that, he'll be around. But yeah, it's just it's a really strange situation until we actually ever see something happen with it.
So from the Colts' perspective, and from your perspective, more importantly, have you kind of sensed anything in terms of players and the vibe that they have with Pagano? Like, is it still like a good relationship? Or because things here in Detroit, nothing has ever soured in between Caldwell and the players. Everything has always been great. There hasn't been any rumblings or anything. I think a lot of people in Detroit, the head coaching position for the Detroit Lions might be the most prolific head coaching position in the entire state. It might be even above Jim Harbaugh in the University of Michigan, to be honest, in terms of how much people talk about it. But I think it's more so based on results, and people pay less attention to how the players are reacting. So what's the situation like in Indianapolis? I'm just intrigued to hear about Pagano. Like, does he still have that locker room, or is that kind of up in the air?
Yeah, I think he definitely does. I think I'll be honest with you. I think that there were some guys that aren't here anymore, and I couldn't even put my finger on who it would be. But I think that some of that was souring last year with some of the guys who aren't in the building anymore.
And are those some of the veterans? Because it definitely seems like the new GM who came in, it's definitely a youth movement.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that it was more of, you know, that Pagano was a guy who, believe it or not, as much of a player's coach as he is a guy who wants to hold guys accountable. He wasn't allowed to do that with a lot of Grigson signings. He was actually told not to, and that's a really strange, you know, situation.
It's a tough dynamic, yeah.
Right. And so I think that the players love Pagano. Not only do they love him for the guy that he is, but they had somebody to compare him to that they could not stand to be in a room with, and that was Ryan Grigson. So when you have that kind of a situation, of course, even if you don't love Pagano, you love him because you're comparing him to the other guy you could be talking to, you know? So I think that everything is good as far as the player head coach situation. I've not heard anything, no rumblings by any means whatsoever of any of the guys that are on the team currently. But it's just, and it's more of a blanket assumption that I would guess a couple of those guys may have started to sour on some things. And I think that's probably why a couple of them aren't there, not just because of age, but I think a couple of those guys were out the door regardless, probably just because, first of all, they weren't playing very well. And then you get, you know, some aggravation in there and some finger pointing and stuff like that. And they're good as gone. And then you add age into it, and in the rearview mirror. It's not even considered anymore. It's over with.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think that there's any issues as far as players and coach. So it is an interesting thing to think about, though, because they had been so successful in their first 3 years together. And then, you know, the past 2 years have been kind of a circus as far as not only losing Luck in 15, he wasn't playing well when he was in the game for the most part. And then last year, he was there almost all season, missed one game, and the team still could not get above 8 wins. That's something that's sad when you have a guy taking snaps with Andrew Luck's caliber. You know, he was great last year. That's the really hard thing to wrap your head around, is that he was really good last year, and the team still couldn't do anything, in late in the game. They were constantly giving up late scores, big plays late. There's legitimately 3 games and possibly a 4th that the Colts could have won last year with, like you said, you know, when you were talking about the Lions in the playoffs the couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
that they're literally one tackle away from winning a game, or one pass breakup that didn't become a pass breakup, or some ridiculous Hail Mary not thrown by Aaron Rodgers but still was completed. Man. You know what I'm saying? So
that hurts. Yeah, hot shots, man.
No,
that hurts.
No, it really wasn't. I'm just saying that Aaron Rodgers is so good at throwing them, and if somebody else throws them, you should be able to knock it down.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't. They were like 4 Colts around these guys, and they did. I don't even know if half of them jumped for the ball. It was just like they'd never seen a Hail Mary before in practice. So.
Yeah, it truly may have been Week 1 in 2016 when the Colts met the Lions. That was where the one path diverged into two. You know, whoever would end up winning that game, maybe, you know, the Colts go to the playoffs if the Lions end up losing that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was definitely one of them. Luck throws 4 touchdowns, no picks, and the team can't manage to tackle anybody after the catch whatsoever. That you know, the 7-minute comeback there where the Colts are up 2 scores against Houston, and Houston comes back on the flimsy arm of Brock Osweiler. and hands one to him. I mean, against the Broncos early in the season, the Colts were within 6 points with 2.5 minutes to go, and a strip sack puts Denver up 2 scores, and the game's over. You know, I mean, it was literally the first play of that drive with over 2 minutes to go, and Andrew Luck, you know, getting ready to go on a 2-minute drive, which he's been so good at.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were several opportunities for the Colts to win 10, 11 games last year, even as bad as they were on defense. And they just couldn't get themselves to do it. And hopefully this year, there's a significant overhaul on defense, and I really like what I'm seeing. What are some of the best positions on the Lions right now, as you see the strengths coming into this week?
Quarterback.
Yes.
I think Matthew Stafford is the most underappreciated athlete in his own city, but also kind of the most overlooked player from a national perspective. I truly think that Matthew Stafford has maybe the second, at least the 3rd best arm in the NFL. I really do. I think he makes throws that other players just can't. And, you know, a lot of what caused Matthew Stafford to get caught up to himself was having a quarterback coach like Jim Caldwell, and also having Bob Cooter come in and start, you know, running that offense and changing kind of the mindset. The offense changed when Calvin Johnson left. It wasn't vertical. It wasn't, you know, Calvin's got 3 guys around him, I'll still chuck it up and we'll see what happens. A lot of those just aren't in the Lions playbook anymore. And it's not really a part of Matthew Stafford's mold anymore. So, you know, the best thing that happened to Matthew Stafford was Caldwell and Jim Bob Cooter coming in here and changing his kind of approach to the game. So quarterback is definitely a strength. Beyond that, if the offensive line is healthy, I think it's probably one of the top 10 units in the NFL for sure. The wide receivers, I think, are a real strength. I think that while they have a lot of depth, their top 3 are probably middle of the pack. But, you know, I think that Golden Tate is the quintessential receiver for their offense. They don't have a big play guy necessarily like a Mike Evans or a Odell Beckham Jr., somebody who can make big flashy catches like that necessarily. But,
sure.
You know, he's definitely perfect for what they do. Now, you mentioned about how the Colts struggled on defense last year. The only team that may have been worse than the Colts on defense last year were the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions defense was a bunch of awful, no good nonsense. And Bob Quinn spent an awful lot of his draft resources on building up that defense.
Mm-hmm.
I still really can't say what the strength is of their defense. I would have to say it's the secondary. if somebody was threatening my life. I would have to shout out secondary. They have Darius Slay, who I think is one of the top 10 cornerbacks in the league. They have some depth back there. They have an old stalwart in Glover Quinn. They have some nice pieces, but along their defensive line, if there was ever a time for the Colts to maybe get some of those backup offensive linemen into the game and feel good about themselves, going against the Detroit defensive front will really help them build their confidence.
That's interesting. I saw some tweets today about Akeem Spence working pretty well and doing what he needed to do to get to the quarterback. Who would be maybe the bright star, so to speak, on that defensive line?
It would be Ezekiel Ansah, but he's on the PUP list. Mm-hmm. He was a name that just escaped my mind for whatever reason earlier, and he's going to be the most important piece of that defensive line. If there's a guy to pay attention to, I'm going to have to say that it's A'shaun Robinson. He's a guy that a lot of people have huge expectations for this season. He and Haloti Ngata kind of fit the same mold as these kind of run stuffers. They really need to get a three tech next to A'shaun Robinson to really have him at home in his position playing one tech, just kind of clogging up the lanes and whatnot. But right now they have Haloti and A'shaun playing with each other. So A'shaun is a guy who really needs to take a step forward this year, because if he does, then the writing will be on the wall for Haloti. He's also a guy who really even thought about maybe even retiring this year. So if A'shaun takes a big step this year, learning under Haloti Ngata, that's really beneficial for him. If he can step up, the Lions feel a lot better about, now that they have a guy on the interior, now they can go on and find their next guy to put next to him. So. Mm-hmm. But also, Ezekiel Ansah is a huge deal. I don't want to undersell that at all. He's a guy who's going into a contract year. Him and Matthew Stafford are both looking for new contracts. So he's a guy who needs to get healthy. He struggled with injuries all last year. But the previous season, he was a guy who had 14.5 sacks. So once he comes back and is healthy, that'll be huge for their defensive line. But A'shaun Robinson, I think, is the guy that a lot of Lions fans are really, really excited to see play this season.
Give me a guy that you think is kind of on the border of roster, not roster, that you're really high on, that you think has got a pretty good shot of doing it.
I mentioned Jace Billingsley earlier, and I promise you, you're going to walk away from Sunday's game and think, wow, if the Lions cut him, he's definitely a guy that I wouldn't want to see end up on their practice squad. I hope that my team goes out and poaches him. So, right. But besides him, there is an undrafted free agent that the Lions got named Jeremiah Valuaga. And he was a guy who never played a full season in college, either due to academics. He was also suspended and dismissed from a team, and he also struggled with injuries. And he was also a guy who tested out pretty below average when it came to measurements at the at his pro day. Now, he was a guy who was the best defensive lineman during the Lions mock game that they had, that I mentioned earlier in the podcast that I went to last Saturday, where they have the blue and whites. He was all over the place on the defensive line. He was playing inside three tech. He was playing outside as a defensive end. He had three sacks in the game. He was the star of the entire game. So Jeremiah Valuaga is a guy to really see play well in that first preseason game, to get some forward momentum going that he can hopefully build in and roll over to the next game, because that's a position where the Lions have other guys. They have Armani Bryant, but he will be suspended for the first four games. They have Kyrie Thornton. He's another guy who's going to be suspended for games to begin the season too. So the Lions have an opening on the defensive line to get more talent, and this is a guy who can step up, and he can take advantage of those opportunities.
That's interesting. One more thing, Ryan, before I let you get out of here.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about Amir Abdullah and the running back position. Now, he had a pretty good day today by all accounts, but you've got Theo Riddick there too, and I'm curious what you see from their 1-2 punch type, and does Dwayne Washington and Zach Zenner realistically figure into this rotation?
I'm going to have to say that Zach Zenner absolutely figures in. He's going to be their power back. He's going to be their third down and short yardage guy. He's going to be their goal line formation guy. Dwayne Washington had his opportunity last season. Now, he was a rookie, and he's also a Bob Quinn guy. He was drafted in the seventh round, so he could definitely play he could play himself into the favor of that regime. But at the same time, he's played so poorly, and he hasn't really shown much in training camp up to this point. So he's a guy who I realistically see on the bubble. They went out and signed Matt Asiata. So if they want to get a guy who is just a solid, a solid depth guy, I think I would probably want to go with Asiata rather than I would Dwayne Washington. But Zenner definitely figures in. Now, Amir Abdullah, he will be a complete game changer for the Lions. They haven't had a guy who's rushed for 100 yards in a game since 2013.
Hmm. Colts had one of those for a while.
It's a sticky situation to be in because, I mean, the Lions had maybe the best running back of all time.
Yeah.
And ever since he walked out of town, they've been struggling to find a guy who can even play halfway decent. So Amir Abdullah's health, while a lot of people will be quick to label him injury prone when he never missed a game in college due to injury, he didn't miss any games his rookie season due to injury, and then suffers a fluke Lisfranc injury last year against the Titans in the second week. He's not a guy I'm ready to call injury prone, but he has to have a healthy, productive season. And I think that all the tools are ready for him. Now, Theo Riddick is a guy who had double wrist surgery in the offseason, so he probably won't play week one against the Colts because he's been practicing in a red no-contact jersey. So, but he's definitely the guy that they will have a lot of fun with. They'll split him outside. Sometimes he lines up outside. He really played that role at Notre Dame, too, as kind of like the jack-of-all-trades on offense. He'll line up in the backfield, and then he'll split out and play wide receiver. He's definitely a pass-catching back. That's what he excels at. If the Lions are handing the ball off to him, they're kind of in trouble.
Right.
He's not the best runner. He manufactures runs. I think he ripped off a big run in the Colts game, but it was I'm thinking about it last season. But it was, I mean, that was the longest run he's probably ever had in his entire career, going back all the way to Pee Wee Pop Warner football. But
that has surprised me that it happened against the Colts.
Yeah, but yeah, he's the pass catcher. When it comes to the 1-2 punch, Theo's the guy who's going to catch all the balls. Amir is going to be the guy who has some more versatility, but he's definitely the runner, and I think he's the guy that they want to give, you know, at least 12 to 15 carries, because that offense is still Matthew Stafford's offense. They're still going to throw the football more than not.
Right. Ryan, I can't thank you enough for stopping by today, man. It was good to talk to you, good to get some inside information kind of on what's going on with the Lions this year. Interesting, because I really see a lot of similarities in these two organizations. And it's fun to kind of see that, not just from, you know, somebody in the NFC, but fun to see that in similar areas of the country, you know, being able to kind of take in what the Lions are doing. There's a lot, obviously, you know, Indianapolis is not far from Detroit or Chicago. So, I mean, a lot of the NFC North, you know, stuff is something that we see a lot in our area as well. So it's kind of interesting to see that. And not only that, but instantly I wanted to watch Jared Davis's career, you know, kind of go, because I was really high on him, wanted him to be in a horseshoe for sure this year. And a lot of people were stuck on some other guys, but that was a guy that I really wanted to see kind of blossom. And I'm interested to watch him and see what he can do. I was also high on Amir Abdullah when he came out. And I'm interested to see how he kind of bounces back this year and to see if he can kind of turn the corner as well. But it was great to talk to you. Great to get, you know, some of this information. Like I said, it's going to be a really fun game to watch Sunday. It's going to be a lot of new guys, I think, on the field to see, you know, kind of like what I said at the top of the show. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what these guys can do right now. And it's going to be working off of pure athleticism and football skills as opposed to, you know, smarts and playbook and being able to really diagnose the game. So I appreciate you swinging by and giving us some of that.
Hey, it was great to pop on, and let's hope for no injuries, and let's hope for the best possible outcome for both sides. I appreciate it, Matt. Anytime you need me to come back, I'm here for you, man.
Absolutely. Make sure you guys are getting over to Apple Podcasts and subscribing. Make sure you guys are also rating and reviewing the show. Those are helping a ton right now, getting this off the ground. So make sure you guys are doing that. Also, get yourselves over to StampedeBlue.com. Check out all the content there. Everything is up, looking good. We've got a lot of good stuff for you guys to sink your eyes into. So Ryan, thanks again, and we'll like you said, we'll hope for no injuries on Sunday. It should be an interesting game. I hope that both fan bases can enjoy the first preseason game of the year. So thank you guys all for listening. I'll talk to you next week right here on the Colts Cast.